Let's get it.
Me, my guys, we really live. Lord, forgive me, pay my tithes. Please don't have me reach inside. In the center console. Keep the semi when I ride. Let off Henny when I drive. In the city, we gon' slide. Bet I be there pronto.
What's going on, Chop Nation? It's your girl, Toya G. Happy to be with y'all again on another Monday night. Believe it or not, it's the 11th. Oh, nope, it's not a Monday night.
It's a Tuesday.
That's real. Be with y'all another week, regardless of what day of the week it is. It is the 11th.
And we back.
It's the 11th out of 12 months in the year 2021. So just like that, we on the way up out of this thing, man. It's moving quick. But y'all been rocking with us week after week, and you know we appreciate that. So shout out to y'all for pulling in. If y'all coming in the comments, don't just say what's up. Thank y'all for saying what's up, and tell us where you from. Represent your hood. Represent your clique.
Hey, shout out to my mama. I see she in the comment section. Shout out to my mama, man.
We love it when mamas pull up. But speaking of your mama, who's the child? Who's the child of the mama? Who else we with?
Sheikah's son.
What a child.
Hey, you know what? We're gonna switch it up, man. We're gonna switch it up. Hey, first name Conscious, last name Lee, theconsciouslee.com coming soon. But you know we still got georgelee.com if you know what I'm saying, looking to still tap in with me into that new website can come up. But yeah, y'all know what time it is. Education is elevation, stay sucker free, the Atlanta Lollipops. Reach over me, search. We got some juicy conversations for y'all tonight, man.
That's what's up.
Hey, I don't have any cool catchphrases yet. My shit coming is on the way. I'm in the lab. But it's Damo, the political plug. You know what I mean? Just bringing some of that balance, some of that beautiful energy. You know what I mean? I'm happy to be back. I miss these beautiful people. We here.
Hey, we love it. Austin, Texas in the building. Alabama in the building. South Florida in the building. ATL in the building.
Up late. Y'all shout out to the East Coast.
Yeah.
All of y'all in the East Coast time zone. Like, we know that if you watch the chop up from the East Coast, y'all fuck with us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, and we got the chop up and chill shirts on the way. So, our East Coast folks, man, y'all holla at us, man, because y'all know nobody show us love like people on the East Coast.
Everybody on TikTok right now, I'm about to get ready to hop off the TikTok live, but y'all going on and hop over, slide over to YouTube right now. You can go to the Chop Up Show on YouTube or the Conscious Lee on YouTube, and you'll be able to join this conversation, man. Y'all going on and slide over there right now. You feel me? I didn't mean to cut you off right there, but definitely trying to...
Hey, get the traffic over here. Definitely want to get the show rolling, though. We're going to start off with a snapshot because we know a lot of things have been going on in the courthouse and on the news cycle with this particular issue. So we're going to let the Consciously go ahead and take it away with the snapshot.
Yeah, man. So we know today the Kyle Rittenhouse case started. And for y'all that don't know, Kyle Rittenhouse pretty much rose to fame, unfortunately, through Jacob Blake Jr. being shot in Wisconsin. And, you know, after he was shot, there was a lot of protests that happened. And Kyle Rittenhouse, a 17-year-old white man, crossed state lines illegally, you feel me, with a, you know, firearm, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, shot three people, killed two of them, and, you know, maimed the other one. And today his trial started. We know that before the trial started, the judges said that the defense would not be able to refer to the people that Kyle Rittenhouse killed as victims, but they will be able to refer to them as looters and arsonists. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? If I believe it, you know what I'm saying, is correct. My question to y'all, you know, does the Kyle Rittenhouse sensationalizing, like coming from the conservatives, like prove conservative contradictions or no? Like, does it prove that conservatives have this double standard way of looking at the law?
Unpack that a little bit more.
I think that it shows that if Kyle Rittenhouse was a black 17-year-old that crossed the state lines with a, you know what I'm saying, an assault rifle, and you feel me, killed somebody, and his gun was still smoking, and he crossed the path of the police, I think that he would have been shot on the spot, and they would have justified it. You feel me? So to me, I feel like it shows that it you know what I mean, there's some double standards when it comes to the law. But I'm asking I'm trying to see if I'm the only one that feel that way. You feel me? So I'm curious, how do y'all see this Kyle Rittenhouse specifically when it comes to the law and how conservatives is kind of wrapping themselves around it.
Go ahead, Blood.
Well, I think it's a question of policing. You know what I'm saying? Like the law is what it is. You know what I'm saying? Like the law says what it says. It's a question of how the, and it's an echo. I've got that echo. It's a question of, like, again, how the police respond to him, how the judge treats him. You feel me? And who shit that is?
I don't hear no echo.
I hear you.
So it must be me.
Yeah, I don't know if you got it on your phone or something pulled up, George. But...
I just went back live again on something else. So we're talking about Kyle Rittenhouse, but
But anyway, so the way I'm looking at it is, this is more so an example of, it's not a question of the actions, but more so the individual. You feel me? Because in a lot of these instances, even because, you know, niggas get killed in instances where they don't commit crimes. You know what I mean? So it's all about how, like, the people in control respond to particular individuals. You feel me? And so I think, so when we talk about, like, that the double standard, it's a question of what they willing to justify. You know what I mean? So I think that's even more kind of fucked up. You know what I mean? In a way, to be like, as you look and see, all right, you got a judge that's willing to demonize people who can't even, like, who can't speak for themselves, right? Like, you calling them rioters and looters. It's okay to call them that, even though that might not be true. You know what I mean? Like, that's fully a question of, like, the politics at play. It's an example of, like, the real control that these people with this mentality have, like, over the court system. You know what I mean? Because there's no checks and balances for that, right? That's something that's clearly politically leaning, but there's no way to push back and be like, okay, somebody got to step in and say, okay, that judge should be removed.
Yeah,
I mean, that's clearly activism.
I think that's the thing that I've been waiting on because of a couple of things. One, as argumentation specialists, one of the things we know is that you have the responsibility of articulating the argument objectively, even if it has emotional or loaded implications, right? You kind of paint that picture by contextualizing the impacts, if you will, or the bad things or the problematic things that can happen, but you should articulate your argument in as objective terms as possible so as to allow your judge to allow the people who are interpreting the argument to do that work. Right. You kind of trust them to be smart enough to piece together that these people were looting or rioting or being criminals or whatever. But you don't blatantly say those types of things. It also, secondly, undermines completely the idea of innocent until proven guilty. So I'm just really trying to figure out, because if looting and rioting are being contextualized as crimes and you have people who have not either had been charged with those crimes or able to defend themselves against the accusations of committing crimes, then how do you just get to paint them as rioters and looters and criminals? You have made them guilty in order to substantiate the innocence of somebody else, which seems like some double jeopardy type shit, because they never got justice in the first way. And then their murderer is literally getting vindicated because of how you've explained who they are in the second breath, right? So it's really, I think that part is what messes me up in terms of what the plug just said. It's like, how are you doing law? How are you? I look at a lot of stuff and I just be like, if for the law, I say it is, and this is not just this. It's in a whole bunch of context or a whole bunch of situations.
In a lot of ways,
the judge has decided to make this decision. That, and I'm like, why the fuck wasn't this decision in the first? Like, who?
It's a clearly fucked up decision.
I mean, but we look at people like Amy Coney Barrett, right? We look at people like what's the other Supreme Court justice's name? You know that we had
Brett Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh, and we look at a lot of their, and they had to elocute their forms of reasoning and the way that they judge certain situations, and we sitting there like, you should not be doing nobody's law, yet they are then given the opportunity to do it anyway. So I think it's kind of, you know, par for the course, but surprising that these judges are even allowed to let this type of stuff happen.
That's
it's a complete, like, there's no impartiality there, like,
at all.
None. You feel me? And, I mean, because again, we can't understate the fact that the people that were killed are being criminalized. It's okay to criminalize them. The people that were killed, literally, it's okay to criminalize them by calling them looters. You know what I'm saying? Like that type of dehumanization is a perfect example of when we talk about privilege. You know what I mean?
I think I said it wrong too. It wasn't arsonists. They were able to call them looters and rioters.
And this is the thing, right? I feel like as much as people complained about Trump, and as much as people was like, you know, Trump was good for this reason and he was good for this, is the reason why he wasn't good. Like, one in every seven federal judge is a Trump appointee. Right? Like, you got to think about that. Like, outside of what we felt about his policies, whether or not he was racist or whatever, who did he empower in those in like these judgeship type positions, right? Because then we see that type of influence clearly being played out in the bench. There's no impartiality. Mm-hmm. There's clearly a clear attempt to protect Kyle Rittenhouse in the court of public opinion. Because, like, on the flip side of that, the argument is that, you know, if you able to call these people victims in the because this is the argument people will make, right? If you, like, if you able to call them victims automatically and just say that he killed the, like, it's a way that he can be demonized in the press, and especially if he got an issue with rioters, there is clearly a perception of the liberal media and the impact the media will have on.
But I mean, I think it either has to be one way or another, right? Because we see what happens when Black victims of crime end up being those victims, and then their entire background gets strung out and paraded out for people to see. I even think it got to be one way or another, right? Either everybody gets a crispy, clean representation of their image, and we're not bringing up nobody's background and shit like that, or bring up everybody's messed up past and characterize what they did all the different ways that you want to, and let the court of public opinion decide, right? But that's what ends up being messed up. We do a lot of work to make and keep the images of white people who are part of crimes, either as victims or as perpetrators, crispy clean, and to make sure that there is no explanation for why they could have done what they did, but there's 1,000 explanations for why Black people are doing the things that they do. And there's some symmetry between this conversation and the one about Ahmaud Arbery, and I want to go back to these judges and their decisions and how they decide to frame things, because the judge had to make a decision that a man who was proven to be out on a jog, which is not a crime, he had to go to the extent of the judge, I want to say they, I don't know if it was man or woman, but had to go to the extent of saying that his past criminal history or anything he's ever done in the past was not relevant to the case. Why does it take a judge for you to say somebody's past criminal history has little to nothing to do with what happened to them when they were on the job? The two are not related to one another. Why is there somebody who has to make the decision if that is the actual logical case about the situation? The court of public opinion and the court of law have this weird, twisted relationship with each other, where my whole point is to say, right, if the shit ends up being as sticky and as stupid as it is in the actual court of law because of what happens outside of the court of law, at least let it happen to be equal opportunity for everybody. Everybody deserves a trash ass in comparison.
See, I think of the parallels when it comes to Makaya Boyd. You know what I mean? And how so many Republicans was jumping out the gym and justify, you feel me, her death, saying that she should have been, you know what I'm saying, killed by the police because the person had a chihuahua. And I'm looking and seeing, the, you know what I'm saying, what's going on in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. It's like, hold on. So he's saying he defended himself and using an AK-47 with someone that had a plastic bag that had a toothbrush and a toothpaste and a poster. So he can fear for his life and use deadly force with a whole, you feel me, assault rifle type shit. And the person that he's saying that he felt like his life was imminent danger to was a person that had a plastic bag and a poster.
The thing is, though, like, when this question about public opinion becomes difficult, because in a lot of ways it's either how you humanize somebody who did some horrific shit, you know what I'm saying, or you flip it and demonize the victim. So it's like, if you can alter the way somebody think about this individual, like George said, like he was somebody who was fighting for his life against these people who were destroying a community. I mean, that's a whole defense tactic, right? Like, the reason why, like, there's a practice of bringing up somebody's criminal background they passed is primarily because it allows them to say, well, if this is how they moved in the past, then this is what we could have predicted what they've done. You know what I'm saying? This is why it would have made sense in order for somebody to respond to them that way, because they was a dangerous individual. You feel me? They were criminal. And so, like, what we're seeing is that this practice, this it's not something that's unique to these individual cases. It's literally how cases are tried in the United States when it comes to Black people, right? The assumption of what it is that they're capable of and what they are willing to do is tied up in how Black people are criminalized. And if you can say that there was some point in your past you can attach them to that type of act, then whatever happened to them was deservedly so, because they can make something like that happen again type shit.
Yeah. And this comment right here from a Cobra Commander said, it's wild he got celebrity status that's been promoted in the media, far-right platformers. I'm honestly worried he's going to get off and then you're going to see him going around on far-right speeches. Not only do I agree with that, I actually had the opportunity and the privilege of speaking with the father of Jacob Blake. And I actually asked him the question about how he felt with Kyle Rittenhouse being able to kind of steal the center stage after his son got shot 7 times in front of his grandson. And, you know what I'm saying, got left paralyzed. And I know we didn't talk about this during our prep, but I actually got the clip, you know what I'm saying, of me asking you know, I ain't gonna play the clip, but he did, you know what I'm saying, pretty much just said.
Y'all go check it out. If y'all go to Conscious Conversations on Joy, if y'all own George Lee Speaks, just go to the videos, Conscious Conversations. I think it's the last one, right?
Like, yeah, I think it's the last episode.
We do one last week. Yeah,
so Taylor or Jacob Blake, and he'll come right up. But he pretty much said that he feel like all this is happening because he's Caucasian, his son is brown, and that, you know, they was able to raise $2 million to get him out of jail, and, you know, have the gall to be able to say one is justified in being shot while the other one is protected, you know what I'm saying, for doing shooting. You feel me? So, you know, she kind of went off, you know what I'm saying? But definitely a big shout out to familiesunited.com. That is the daughter of Breonna Taylor. I mean, the niece of Breonna Taylor. I know, the aunt of Breonna Taylor.
The
father of Jacob Blake's website, where they pretty much raising money to be able to go and, you know, pretty much support other families that are also experiencing police brutality. That is familiesunited.com. I think that when you go to the website, to my Conscious Conversations episode, it'll pretty much say at the bottom of the ticker if I'm saying it incorrectly. But I think it's familiesunited.com. Yeah, familiesunited.com.
Awesome. Well, a lot to be said about this case is still unfolding. This is day one of what will be probably a long, if not eventful, trial. And hopefully he gets the time that he deserves, you know. Regardless of the characterization, regardless of the sidesteps, you know, we hold our breath in these types of situations, but it's something to be seen, because as we know, court cases set precedents. Who knows how to say that in the plural, but they set the tone.
I said the name wrong too. It's Makai Bryant, not Makai Boyd. Makai Bryant.
Yes. But they set the precedents and set the tone for other decisions made in these environments, in these institutions, and in these capacities. So we're going to see what we're going to see. But that's that. Next job.
All
right, so I guess we're gonna call this one. We're gonna call this the culture chop.
We want to call it the meta,
or should it be the social media chop,
or the meta chop?
Let's call it the social media chop, because that's we're not gonna give them. We're not gonna let them take over our shit.
No, taking over our brand, and we already had the social media chop banner up. Because, of course, we are broadcasting on Facebook as well as YouTube, everywhere else. But a lot of what we do is on Instagram. Yeah, you know I mean? And so we are part of a lot of the Chop Up Show, and what we do is a part of the under the Facebook umbrella. But what we've seen recently is that Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg are pushing to evolve your social media experience. By introducing this new VR approach to social media called Meta. Essentially, Facebook is now introducing a VR social media experience entitled Meta. What Mark Zuckerberg described Meta as was a really interconnected virtual experience that was similar to turning your newsfeed into your living room. You get it? You instead of like logging into your phone and like seeing people's statuses, you put on a headset and you went into your news feed.
Sure.
And actually talked to people about how they felt and had entire conversations and literally shared pictures via hand. Like literally, I'm picking, you know what I'm saying? They can show up in your living room.
In the Matrix.
Y'all can't see my face if y'all listening to this, but it is, I'm disgusted by the thought. But go ahead.
You can show up in theirs. So there is this entirely new approach to social media that Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook is trying to push that centered around virtual and augmented reality. So virtual reality is when you put in a headset and like you see and move just everything in front of you. But augmented reality is when there is a interaction with your virtual user interface and the real world in front of you. You know what I'm saying? So if anybody is familiar with Pokemon Go and that craze, when the Pokemon was right there in front of you, you feel me? Like that was augmented reality. So they took the camera, was able to project an image that you could interact with on your phone type shit. So through virtual reality and augmented reality, Facebook is trying to bring your entire social media experience into your like for real, like some futuristic sci-fi scary shit, which the term meta actually has a connection to, but we're gonna get to that anyway when we talk to George and get to that part of the conversation. But I do want to start this off with the way I want to do it, because the way we talked about it is we all have very interesting avenues and ways to go with this. And I want to start with Toya, your initial reactions, like when you seen and heard about all the shit. And then I want to go into what we discussed in terms of like that interconnectedness in that conversation. So first, boom, Meta. How was you feeling?
Well, okay, my first response to Meta was that it is too much, and my concern, and it was anxiety inducing, and part of the reason why it was too much is that it's very involved, and it's over-integrationist, and it's trying to take some shit that I'm happy that I can take this and be like, no more. And now it is necessitating that place that I'm already doing a lot of business and stuff on and handling this and that is just even more invasive to my real life. And here's where I struggle a lot is that y'all, as a 32-year-old millennial who tries to pride myself in staying up and staying in the know, I feel like in a lot of ways I'm being left behind. Now the language, the term for that, I don't know what you can accredit this term to, but I learned it in my discipline, communication studies, is being a Luddite, right? Or being kind of the last to engage in the trends and even resistant to engaging in the trends that, you know, are out there and popular. The term Luddite is really weird. It's like L-U-D-D-I-T-E or whatever. But I found
myself Luddite. Luddite.
And so I'm turning into the curmudgeon that I never thought I'd be, and I'm doing it.
Jesus, early. Okay, you know? We know what you got your degree in, Luddite, curmudgeon. Come on, dog. Work with us, dog. Like we you got your master's in talking.
I wasn't trying to do anything besides sound like myself when I speak.
Luddite, curmudgeon.
I feel like an old lady and like I'm aging myself because a lot of, don't do me, Dominique, this social media out here is overwhelming. It's overwhelming. And I say this to say, bro, I feel like I'm about to get left behind, but I feel like if I want to stay ahead and stay with shit and stay current and relevant, like one thing you can't afford to do is sleep on technology. You know what I'm saying? So it is a weird, complicated feeling. And the whole reason, my whole take on this conversation, now that I've contextualized it and been lambasted and accosted for doing so, thank you, Dominique. I'll continue to use my dollar words. Is that it's too much. It's oversaturation. I saw an article today, and it was just a screenshot on Instagram, but the name of the article, the title of the article, which I think we should all read, is by Michelle Goldberg, and it is, "We Should All Know Less About Each Other." And I was like, amen, Jesus. And it was just a screenshot of the title of the article. And I think the context for it says, on the internet, exposure to people unlike us often make us hate them. So clearly it talks about how just knowing too much about people actually creates an antagonism toward them. It hates you. It makes you not want to like them in real life or be around them. And I feel like that is so true. And that things like Meta are only going to open up that opportunity and make it even more real to me. Because at first I can scroll past you. I can silence you. I can not watch your video. I can unfollow. I can do all types of shit. I feel like any more attempts to make us integrated is going to force it back into my forefront and into my plane in ways that I don't want to see no more. So it's just too much. Last word I'll use is, I am currently overly inundated with the news and information about other people's lives, and it perturbs me in a way.
Perturbs.
Yes.
Now you're becoming gratuitous. Right? Let's do that.
I'm done talking to you. But yeah, right. It's too much.
Right. Okay. Okay. The knowing too much about each other. I agree. I think it makes it easier for us to identify things in people we don't like and hyper focus on those things.
It also forces you into, like, I don't want to be in a room with you. It undermines the purpose of social media. I don't want to be in a room with you. I want to feel free from having to feel the proximity. And some of these, you know, the way that I get to see the little red notification just be there, and I'll be like, when I feel like it. When I'm ready, and anything that allows for you to, like, and I'm sure there will be measures that don't allow people to just be all intrusive and up in your shit, but the realer and more tactile, make it feel, it just will always feel like too much. I'm the person who don't want to talk on the phone with you. I definitely don't want to go in a digital space with you and sit in there and be like, hey, how you doing? How do you feel? Why you feel like that? Oh,
what you speaking to actually kind of, like, I have a thing, and it's probably, you know what I'm saying, some papers out there that kind of confirm the theory that I have, is that, like, on social media, people are worse people.
Definitely, like, for real. Definitely. Like, over-identify with all of their ugliness, so all of the shit they embarrassed to do or wouldn't do regularly, they do extra on the internet. So it's right. Just like, what does that mean in metaverse?
But I think that, so because people are worse people, like, for example, Microsoft created like the concept of trolls, where that came from. Even though trolls probably go back, it's probably motherfuckers that was trolling in ancient ways. We could probably pull up an article of ancient ways that niggas was trolling back in the day. But for today though, like, the reason why we know that social media, like, represents the worst of us as a people is Microsoft created an AI some years back that took just a bunch of, just went through what was trending on Twitter, mm-hmm. and created a personality based around what was trending on Twitter. And like, after a while, like, not that long of a time, it just became racist, sexist. Like, it just became a terrible person.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this AI, all it did was learn from shit that was trending on Twitter, and it became racist, sexist, but I think it was gay. You know what I'm saying? It was weird, right? Like, it created this whole personality that was just like, damn, like, this is, if all somebody did was learn from social media, they would be a fucked up individual. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, like, the reason why I think that is because it's like, there's a comfortability that we shouldn't fucking have. Like, when it comes to that interconnectedness, like, yeah. I believe that we are actually, like, we're meanest, we're rudest, and I be telling my wife this all the time, to the people that we closest to. You know what I'm saying? Like, the people that we got the most love for, they get the worst us. Because, like, we know, because we know that they're going to be there. Huh. You know what I'm saying? It's something that I'm cognizant of. But, like, that's how, when people talk about, like, take it, like they felt like somebody took them for granted. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's like, when you have that idea that somebody's going to be there, you know what I mean? Like, you don't work as hard. Like, you don't feel like you have to, because, like, I got them. They're there. You know what I mean? And so it's like that. But that's why, but that's something I check about myself. That's why I make sure that, like, I'm kind. You know what I mean? Like, I work to be that, knowing that, like, it's easy for me to fall into a habit of just talking shit. I don't need to. You know what I'm saying? I'm working on a relationship book. Y'all don't worry about it. But it's a level of comfortability that people have with social media that just allows them to let that the ugly them out and it be normalized. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so if we increase that type of relationship, it's not about to be motherfuckers kicking it, playing made up weird board games on Facebook. You know what I'm saying? It's gonna be hate rallies and hate speeches.
Tell me if y'all feel it, how y'all feel about this other side of it too. Because even outside of the negativity of Facebook or Meta and what it does and provides, I feel like all these social media platforms take the fun and anticipation out of like some major shit we were told we were gonna have like in life. So like reunions, pointless. Kind of phased out the need and desire from them. Like they were already kind of contentious people. Like I'm not going to this reunion or that reunion. I hate these people. I hated high school, whatever. But for some, I know for me, for us, even like in pop culture, it was like a big deal to go to your whatever reunion. But I feel like it takes out, like when I think about knowing too much about people, it's not just the negative side. It's also just like the real shit about their life. Cause like when I see people in public sometimes, and I've been guilty of this, I'm a whole lot more socially anxious than people give me credit for. But if I see somebody in public and I feel like it would be way too much for me to go out of my way to say what's up to them, if it's not going to be disrespectful, I'm going to pass on it. Because what are we going to talk about? Your baby that I know you have, the wedding that I liked already, the new job you like. I know all your business. So like,
right. And it's creepy to like let you know that I know all your business. So we don't like, even really cool like that. When you just Facebook friends.
How's the kids doing? I seen that you...
You know what I mean? And like, so instead it's just like you being weird. Like, I saw you. I went to whatever last month. Like, you clocking me now? Like, this is awkward. And now it's just a whole lot of too much. And we don't know how to navigate.
You be overthinking like, shit. I can tell. You be overthinking.
Probably. But so, blame it on social media. Because not only do I know it, I got the Instagram photo S version of it. I got the paragraph version of it on Facebook. I got the, like, I just...
Yeah, how was dinner last night? I saw that you air fried some asparagus. Was
it you and your wife celebrated y'all anniversary?
But it's really cool like, because the other
we
side
wasn't even that close in high school.
You know what I mean? Oh my god! Like, I'd be looking at certain stuff like, head, man. We need to rock. But the other side of it is like it is pretty neat when people can come up and say, "Hey, I've been seeing what you up to," or "I'm excited." Was excited about that or whatever. Like, so it's neat, but it's just an oversaturation. Like, I feel like it has forced us to skip a step of the beauty of just seeing people at different stages of their lives and having them pull back the layers and tell you what they want you to know. Like maybe they were being really emotional and for this group of friends, they talked about the tragedy or the loss of the child or the loss of the job or whatever, because they were just using social media as a diary. But in like real life, I didn't really want you to know that part. So I should be able to tell you like the light version of that. Like, yeah, my dad did pass away. Really sad, working through it. Thank you so much. Moving on. But you got the long abridged version because of how social media works. It's really weird. It's a lot to think about. But I would prefer to opt out of all of it and just do it the old fashioned way. That's me.
So I'm a that's interesting. Cause I think that leads into where I ran into with Meta, because
Toya took that. Toya, you gave me a lot to chew on, think about.
Yeah, you know, I mean, no, because I felt that, because I've always thought about it on the flip side, right? And like just the fact that we are more connected, like humans are more connected now than any time ever in the past. You feel me? Like we literally do a weekly show from three different cities. You know what I mean? Like so, like that. That's something that nobody, like, communication age, information age, hyperspeed, all that shit. Whatever science fiction words. But where my mind went to is, I'm a science fiction nerd, so I'm not too surprised by all this. I'm like, oh, the future, here we go. But they were sitting in, and he was talking about, like, meetings being transitioned from, like, people, like, actually coming into places. But actually, people just throwing on their headset and like, cause like VR. We think of VR as like games, like playing video games and doing that type of shit. But like now, he's literally saying you put on the headset and go to work. Mm-hmm. You meet with people. You have business meetings, that type of shit through Meta. And what fucked me up is they were saying that like it would be avatars, like so you would like you wouldn't we wouldn't come in here like this on camera like Zoom. We literally, like, we would walk, like, we would put on our headsets, we're walking into this meeting, and we're seeing each other's avatars.
Right.
And on one hand, somebody would look at that and like, think this transhumanist thought and be like, you know, it's a way that this is transcending race. You feel me? Now we're transcending, like, identity. They're like, hold on. You got to listen. Because from the concept of transhumanism, because that meta is a shift in transhumanism, a approach to merge the physical with the virtual.
Right.
You feel me? At a degree that we haven't had. Mm-hmm. Because even this type of interaction is an instance of that merger of the physical and the virtual.
Right.
But with this, you feel me? You would have a situation where you could literally be anybody you want to be. Now, y'all hear me out. I play video games, right? I'm not going to be long-winded, but you just got to walk with me, though. I play video games. And a lot of the games I play, you can create your own character. I'm narcissistic as fuck. Every character looks just like me. I don't make, you know what I'm saying, some whatever. Any character, they're going to have a beard. They're going to have the same haircut. It, you know what I mean? I'm going to make somebody look like me. But what I've noticed and what I know about, like, watching other people play games online is that they, like, especially white people, they make all these different type of motherfuckers. Like, they make the fairies. You feel me? They make black women characters. They make, like, if you watch, like, Grand Theft Auto online, like, it's a lot of these white boys is running around in Grand Theft Auto robbing banks, shooting shit. As black women dressed up in bikinis and doing, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's how they play the game. You transition that to, like, this virtual space where, again, you can now control, like literally control what you look like and how you're represented in these spaces. And again,
nah, bro, they're gonna do it like Black Mirror, though. They're gonna do it like Black Mirror, make it where you be you, and all you're gonna be able to do is just add accessories to your avatar to make it where you still get to be X, Y, and Z.
Yeah,
nah, I mean, bro, they already said you could, like, they already said, you know what I'm saying? Like, you,
but I think you would be hella sus if your name, if you're Brad from accounting and you pop in here looking like somebody named Keith, like at work. And I guess that's depending on if you have diversity measures that somebody would check you on. Because if you work in spaces that are, like, all white, but I don't know, that shit would be weird. Like, I think you would be called out for that. Like, professional meeting. But in participating in other rooms and in other spaces and in more, like, leisure entertainment context, that's where I feel like it could be really weird.
Hold on. Think about it, though. Mm-hmm. We just talked about a story where a judge flat out said, these dead people, you can't call them victims. We talking about a murder story where we live in a country, we live in a society where a judge just told the people at the trial that these dead people cannot be called victims. You feel me? When we think about instances of, like, black people feeling uncomfortable, women feeling uncomfortable, queer, trans, gay people feeling, lesbian people feeling uncomfortable, it's usually a pattern of behavior that's not really taken seriously until there's this big incident. You feel me? It's a lot of shit to get allowed. But what I think, what happens to me, though, is I think this is another, this adds, like, a level of escapism that allows white people to, again, mystify the conversation of race through this transhumanist game, right? Because it's like, if the whole idea is to change our approach, right? Like, if the whole idea is to, like, move away from race, like, that's how people think about it, right? Like, we got to stop thinking about race, right? Well, in a world where you got this one white dude who's purple, and then this other white dude who's represented by this blue alien looking figure, is the white man, like, dressed up like a black woman, like a black mermaid? You feel me? Is that racist? You know what I'm saying? Like, transhumanist conversation?
I think, I don't know, because not all of that.
Kevin said, we already have digital blackface.
True. So there's a lot that you said that I kind of trying to find some different entry roads into. I think the first thing that I want to get into, because not everybody's intention in making. I mean, I think that there is a risk of post-raciality, right? The risk that people start thinking that in this world, because I've done this thing, or I'm not a white person, or I'm not embodying whiteness in this way, that I'm doing something meaningful in the context of race. There are also always those people. There are also those people who won't be thinking that hard about it. And we'll just kind of want, and those are the more benign kind of, I just want to be purple. That's my color. I just want to be a, because that's my shit or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And so when I say benign, I mean like that, it's less than problematic or whatever. And you get into that. I think the digital blackfacing is the worst of it and the largest fear of it. And I think that that is going to be kind of the scary.
Only heightened.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think instead of being concerned about assuming like notions of post-raciality, which is non-unique, everybody already does since slavery was over, people have been thinking we post-racial and shit. Right. So give them another way to sidestep and circumvent the reality of race. Like, okay. But I think that racial catfishing, that racial blackfacing that will turn into racial catfishing could set the tone for some really tricky and weird shit. Now you talk about video games. Right. And it's very interesting because while I've never been a gamer, I have always had a majority of dude friends. And I've always, we have spent a lot of casual time. I've watched a lot of people make a lot of characters on these games. And outside of the actual eroticism that exists in the process of men, yes, there's a degree of eroticism that allows for you to make your favorite, the perfect player, the perfect wrestler, the perfect football player. I'm sorry, you hate it. It's real, but it's a fact. There's a level there. There's layers to this shit. Even beyond that, I think the capacity for white people to start to dibble and to dabble in more material and concrete ways, even outside of that game, with shit like skin tones and hair textures and background stories and all types of weird shit, like that's where it's gonna be kind of crazy. Because, for example, I think of like, what's the laws in place that affirmative action, right? Where if I can ride out, because jobs gonna start hiring through these VR, through these meta spaces. If I can be the black person that they would prefer to hire, and then surprise Scooby-Doo, pull the mask off, I'm really this white guy, but I know to meet your diversity metrics, you really wanted a black person, so I had to create a, you know, like, it gets really weird, and that's where we get into the digital but catfishing.
Well, a whole bunch of Rachel Dolezal's on the internet.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where it starts to get weird, because if my whole LinkedIn profile is based on your ability to come in and be a part of the black experience that I curate and create for you, but one that you never have to verify. It the slippery slope gets really weird.
Slippery slope, man.
It's getting weird.
And some of it can be harmless the way that it is, and the way that, you know, on Twitter, a lot of people say weird ass shit, and then you go click on their avatar and it's a fucking cartoon or some shit, right? Yeah. Like,
or even now, how you doing TikTok now? They'll spam on, or even on all social medias, they'll spam in your comment section as a black person in it, or as a random person. Like, that's not this. Hey, white woman, stop acting like you a Brandon. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And that's what I was gonna say. And then before we move on to George, and we get into George breakdown.
I was gonna answer your question by going like transitioning to mine, being like, nah, I think that the way in which how the virtual world is being kind of like being developed, it's only gonna be like created on top of the disparities that we have now that make it where the haves is gonna be able to take more advantage of having things virtually. And make it where the have nots lack even more what we don't understand, what you don't have virtually. So I see it as the meta world, or just make it where you'll be able to tell who's who based off of, you know what I'm saying, now how we doing now. You feel me? Shit. Now I can hop on any social media platform now and see somebody not from the black community misappropriating black vernacular English. Oh, that was bussing, brother. It's like, what the fuck you just say? So right. I think that, you know, you still be able to see how everybody want to be a nigga until it's time to be a nigga. They might love black culture, but they don't love black people. And it's just like, we see that's what's going to happen.
You know, when I think about this, I mean, the futurist, and I just want to say this real quickly, I think the futurist kind of desires of Mark Zuckerberg with Meta mean that there could be things in store that we aren't even able to predict or to account for, because the goal is so much to move beyond the bullshit that has been created, the mess that has been created by Facebook and the status quo, and to kind of transcend that without fixing it. I'm interested in the lengths they're willing to go in to truly create a new frontier of what it means to participate in social media. And I mean, the human brain is as limited as it is infinite. So really all we can do is sit and hope that nothing that he does is just as insidious as the stuff that he's been doing up to this point.
I mean, I think, and we do got more of a breakdown of where Meta got its name from. From some dude that George found on TikTok, we thought it was pretty interesting. But before we get to that, I think what's being said though is already being identified and how Meta's being marketed and even how it's being introduced. The one thing that Mark Zuckerberg kept hinting towards was that it's going to be expensive, like the technology, what it means to take advantage of the space early on is going to require a lot of different devices. It's going to require a lot of subscriptions, a lot of memberships, a lot of shit that's going to cost money. He even pointed out that, like, that even though they're going to lose a lot of money in this development, he pointed out that the reason why a lot of that shit is going to be expensive the way it is because they can't lose that much fucking money. They got to recoup some of that shit. I mean, at this point, Zucks was just up front with it. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like already the way, I mean, he's pointing to how this space is will pretty much only be available for people who could really afford that shit right now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one of those things to where it's like, anybody that's able to, like, get a foothold and take advantage of what's now, essentially, we can call it what it is, virtual real estate, you know, that it's going to be that much more expensive. And by the time they get it to a point where, like, even what he hinted towards was a more profitable, more mass-produced version of it, again, that's already hinting towards a different experience. You know what I'm saying? Like, that mass-produced experience, or do you want to, like, literally cater and create your own world? So, I mean, you already seeing from the jump, like, that divide exists. What you about to say, Toya?
Well, no, I'm in the comments kind of looking and peeping. Just thinking about, first of all, shout out to Miss Maisha for showing love and definitely dropping a donation.
Appreciate that, Miss Maisha.
Yeah, showing love to the channel and showing love to what we do. We definitely love that. Baby Oku also dropped a comment I want to look at. It says, how do we indigenize and Africanize digital spaces so where we're not only giving rich people so much money, but the safety of our people are centered? They always tend to build things off of our expense. And that's a great question. And I want to ask the question, should we? I think I like that question, but I want to put a twist on it. Should we attempt to indigenize and Africanize digital spaces and make spaces for ourselves to go and use them? Or is this a good time to get off the train? Is this a good time to get off the boat? And as Black and brown people really kind of fight for some of our agency to not be trapped in this digital world, digital space, and kind of move away from the internet and these digital spaces altogether? So that's the question I'm going to toss to y'all.
Hey, wife.
Oku was throwing out there. But what y'all think?
Man, I think it's get woody to get lost. Man, I think it's get woody to get lost. It's time for, I feel like we really already recognizing him. Yeah, I feel like we already recognizing that most of the trends and most of the apps that we be on are built off of Black trends, Black dances, Black vocab, Black all that. So I think that, to me, what it means to Africanize or indigenize the space is to be able to almost carve out space to be able to, you know what I'm saying, stake claims in kind of this virtual, you feel me, you know what I'm saying, frontier. You feel me? You know, the colonizers, the white supremacists have always, you feel me, been able to go out and carve out shit for themselves. And I think that now we can see that a lot of these white people are, you know what I mean, trying to now move a lot of their funds and resources on, you know what I'm saying, on the virtual spaces. And I think that because we already know we're going to ultimately be the laborers one way or another of these virtual spaces, I think that we must think about how we can center our well-being around it, because we know inevitably, regardless of how it works, we're going to have to be on these spaces. We know that now a lot of our jobs got pushed into being virtual. You feel me? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, like, so shit, I think that when we think about what it means to do an interview, when we think about what it means to give a resume, when we think about what it means to even clock in some instances, we got to also think about how a lot of our people are going to be the ones that's having to go put their labor in on the front rows. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I feel like we got to automatically, in my mind, be purposeful and intentional thinking about it. And I feel like because the world is already going to be so virtually dependent, the more and more technological dependent, I feel like we might as well go on and start embracing our Afrofuturism as much as possible and trying to learn from the past, but also trying to dictate the future.
Can I ask some clarification about your answer, though? Because I'm kind of just confused about how you're concluding. Is then your response that we should be a part of spaces like Meta and be represented in those spaces and kind of take up space there so that we don't miss out on the trends? Or is your argument that we should be creating separate indigenized and Africanized spaces? And the reason why I ask is that, you know, we deal with, you know, fan base. We deal with other places that are trying to grow, trying to expand, but they need that traffic. And we got to get there in order to get that power to be competitive, to have that depth. And so I guess I just want to clarify, do you think that we should be leaning into what Meta has to offer and carving out our own spaces there? Or do we need to be indigenizing and Africanizing our own spaces and depending on that to kind of gain its own traction for us to stay connected in the digital world?
Like, I think we have to be doing both of those things, just recognizing how business works and recognizing how networking works. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, even if it wasn't in the virtual world, if I had one business over here and I'm trying to build up, you know what I'm saying, consumers and build up a market over here, I'm going to have to go over there to do some networking. So in my mind, even right now, you know what I mean? Like right now, I'm literally one of the content board creators of, you feel me, Fanbase. But I recognize that even the owner of Fanbase wants all of us as a part of the board to be trying to cycle, you know what I'm saying, traffic from our other platforms to go over to Fanbase. Mm-hmm. You feel me? So it's still, you know what I'm saying, I think that a simultaneous thing that has to be going down, because we know that ultimately, shit, Meta has billions of dollars that's circulating around the world. We know our grandma, our grandpa, our uncles, our aunties, our parents is going to be on there. You feel me? So it's still recognizing that, you know what I mean, inevitably still that we over there. So my mind is like, shit, trying to carve out as much space as possible, as well as making sure we're dictating the intellectual property, dictating the content rights, dictating, you feel me, the revenue splits, and being able to recognize, you know what I'm saying, what's going on with that. And I think the earlier you get into it, the better it is.
And see, and I think that is inevitably where it fails, specifically for Black people. You know what I'm saying? And because ultimately what you have is, what George is speaking to is the coercion that is capitalism. You know what I'm saying? Like, because this is what the new plantation looked like, this is where we're herded off to. You know what I mean? Because my question is, can a digital space be Black? You know what I mean? Like, for example, like, we're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, right? Like, we say Black shit. You know what I mean? But because of who controls cyberspace, right? Like, who controls even access to be here? Can it be Black? Can it be fully Black? Because the person that controls the access to it is not Black. They not African. They not us. Like, the person that says, I'm cutting off the internet. Or even the people who say how the internet can be broken down and, like, the net neutrality conversation is happening right now. Like, there's nothing Black influence in any of that. There's nothing African influence in any of the conversation of net neutrality at all. So ultimately, the problem with the transition to the virtual space, even with the necessity that capitalism creates, is that it's more so, again, a transition of the plantation. Like, how to, it went from plantations to 9-to-5s. Then the 9-to-5 is going to shift from, like, the physical labor to the mental labor. You know what I'm saying? Like, really from, because even like George said, our labor is going to be used, so it might as well be used in a space where it can be beneficial. But again, what that speaks to is the space may change, but the dynamic is the same, though. So even if we use the labor for that space, it can't be an African space. It can't be a Black space.
I mean, and then we come back. Go ahead, my bad. Go ahead.
I was going to finish up by just saying that, just because, like, our relationship, like, when we talk about Africa and just, like, the what it was, like, the physical relationship with the land that created the spiritual understanding. Like, when you shift that to the virtual, then, again, that's the machinations of capitalism.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm saying, I interpret the question as Africanized and indigenized as recognizing the space is already not that, and we're trying to make it that. So how I interpret the question is being like, right now we're streaming on Facebook and we're streaming on YouTube. We recognize that ultimately we want to be on these spaces and that we don't own the spaces. Now, we have an alternative called Fanbase that's Black owned and Black operated, but it doesn't negate how real estate, literally, you feel me, is on Facebook and on YouTube and on Instagram.
You know what I'm saying? So in my mind, us recognizing right now, we can talk all the shit we want to talk, but we are on Facebook right now. You see what I'm saying?
We are.
In my mind, it's like, yeah, we're seeing this new space that's going on. So it's like being able to be, make it where the gatekeepers don't keep us out and make it where, you feel me, Huey or Israel or Zane or, you feel me, she, whoever come afterwards don't have to worry about all of these different restrictions and regulations to be able to get access into side of the fence, because the gatekeepers like, no, 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 no. How they able to do it in all the other industries? Because in my mind, when you was talking, I'm thinking the music industry and thinking of literally, I watched a Rick James saying documentary and him talking shit about MTV and how they only played white people and they never played black people. You know what I'm saying? How he was almost, you know what I'm saying? I feel like being healthily pessimistic and being like, they don't want to play none of the nigga shit. This, that, and the other. We do all this shit, but they only play white people shit. And they had, you know what I'm saying, went and picked, you feel Michael Jackson, like, we're going to choose the most cleanest black person we can choose. We're going to choose that. And in my mind, it's like, yeah, in 1980, they could not vision hip-hop being the number one genre, you know what I'm saying, in the world. Had they been able to envision it, I think that they would have been able to position themselves differently of thinking about going back to catalogs, the bullshit-ass 360 deals, and a whole bunch of the practices and tactics that we know that's shitty and horrible in the music industry writ large. So we able to right now to have foresight to recognize right now, we see that black people, we are literally the pioneers or a lot of times the energy that's able to fuel these engines. So we can see that now and already start to dictate from a legal financial standpoint to be able to, hey, hold on, this our shit. You know what I'm saying? And it's so, because I know right now it's consciously, it's like, hey, when you come to me, you better, you know, them, all this shit better be lined up. And I think that we all had that mentality when we going into metaverse or meta, whatever they want to call it. I think that, you know what I'm saying, we can have some of that same shit. If we go in thinking like, you feel me, Manny Fresh, go in thinking like, you know what I'm saying, shit, I feel like I can name a whole bunch of names. But I think, I feel like it's about how we going into it. And recognizing that we're going to be on the space regardless, like shit, they're gonna like literally they switched it up on November 1st from Facebook to Meta Facebook on the stocks. That ain't changed shit. We still doing chop up every week. So I'm just seeing like we might as well in my mind go there. Like I get what y'all saying in terms of philosophy and theory, but in my mind it's like pragmatically speaking, shit, this the terrain we living in, this the reality we living in. We ain't going nowhere.
You can tell George making a little bit of that social media money. Go ahead, Toya. What was you about to say?
Get some more of it though. We ain't getting nearly enough. It's the look. We ain't getting enough.
Well, one of the things I think about and that I've constantly been thinking about as you all have kind of broken down this section of the conversation is what it means for us to indigenize or Africanize anything, because I'm going to go back to my favorite Toya Green argument, which is we are not a monolith. It's very hard to kind of explore what that looks like for people, because you do have people, you know, individuals who have, you know, sincere and, you know, moderate or meaningful success on these platforms that see kind of the ability to galvanize conversations, to get traction, to get visibility, to do whatever their mission and goal is on these spaces. But the other side of it is a lot of people don't and won't ever have those experiences, won't never rise to those levels of notoriety, or simply passive users of the space. And so kind of figuring out how they fit in those types of spaces and places is always interesting. Vance also pointed out that apps like, and we also had this conversation, I forget that the episode, I think it was If You Build It, They Will Come or something like that, where we talked about black social media platforms. I think this is when Clubhouse was taking off.
Was running over
to that site. And it was, the question was, you know, if black people really made a self-sustained black site, would black folk go and support it? Would they choose it over something else? Like, and I think there's a trade-off there. And I'm not disagreeing with you, George, but I think that the trade-off is the reason why you're gonna have to do both, is because I don't think there's gonna be a world where you can leave X amount of followers on the table. I mean, let's be honest. I've seen a lot of TikTok creators and users be like, man, F TikTok. I hate TikTok, man. I'm sick of the tech. Damn, I want my account back though. All right, let me try to get this account back. Let me try to work on getting
to create a new account to talk shit about TikTok on TikTok. Yeah.
And so you don't want to walk away from the clout, from the notoriety, from
what you build, like what you build on that space.
And so I think even if there was a secondary space, I don't see there being a whole lot of black folk who are willing to completely abandon one space and go and rally around one space wholeheartedly and completely. Yeah. And those are for a lot of obvious reasons. And what I was getting at with what Vance said is that fan base is still relying on Apple and Google to function. So until and if
ain't nowhere around it,
just blow up everything we know about digital telecommunication and start with companies from the ground up that are for us by us, then it's going to be kind of hard to do. But
literally, because if Apple and Google decide that it's not going against the, you know what I'm saying, guidelines, they'll be able to take our fan base, they'll be able to take it off. So it's just recognizing that we're going to have
like, all like, you see what they did to Fortnite. They did that shit to Fortnite.
Not only see Fortnite, we've seen what they did to I can't remember the conservative website. I mean, the conservative app they had, they took down. You know what I'm saying?
It was a few. But just a quick rebuttal to what George was saying. I think the coercion argument is you can't get past that. But we got to keep in context what we doing though, right? On the question of can it be an Africanized space? Can we we can't indigenize and we can't Africanize virtual spaces. You know what I'm saying? Primarily because the capitalism that is at the foundation of what it takes to sustain a virtual space. You know what I'm saying? Like there's nothing. I mean, literally, even what makes virtual spaces possible, like literally shits on. You know what I'm saying? Like, for example, like Apple, Google, Microsoft, all being sued by the Congo. You know what I mean? Because they are benefiting from children mining the resources like the cobalt and shit needed to run their devices to make the digital space possible. So, like, literally, we can't escape the fact that the foundation of the digital space, you know what I'm saying, is literally relying upon the same capitalism that not only sparked and incentivized the transatlantic slave trade and chattel slavery, but continues to incentivize the same capitalist efforts to maintain shit like the digital space.
Yeah, and if you apply this to the question that you asked earlier about this transhuman bullshit, and it's the reason why it literally goes away completely, because you acknowledging that whatever we're building is already built on the current disparities that make it possible, which goes back to what we're talking about right now. And being like, okay, we recognize in reality right now, the Congo is being exploited by all these multinational corporations that they literally build multi-trillion dollar, you know what I'm saying, empires on their backs. So the question becomes, what would it mean for those individuals, for that country to be able to have a bigger stake in what's being built on their backs already, because you acknowledge it's already being built on their backs. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's what it means to answer the question, being like, yeah, we are recognizing that there are already space being built that's not by us. So we occupy space on those particular apps, but we also try to make sure we occupy and use the functions of apps like Fanbase, because we know that's how those things happen. But also make it where we understand now that we have all these different alternative apps that's, you know what I'm saying, primarily white apps. And we don't see them as being, you feel me, competition to each other. We can coexist on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So my point is, when another black app comes on, so let's say like Kev On Stage app pops off, or let's say that Derrick Grace, you know what I'm saying, app pops off, we don't start to force these crazy, you know what I'm saying, false notions of competition, where we can't be on Kev On Stage apps, Fan Base app, and Dead Grace app. You feel what I'm saying? Because we on the same app at the same time. But then also recognizing that even for us to download the apps out of his name, we got to go to the Google Play Store, or we got to go to the YouTube Play Store. I mean, or we got Apple Play Store. So we still we're around these white folks. So to me, indigenizing is like social, like embracing social life. You know what I'm saying? While having social death or shit fucked up, but I'm finna make lemonade. You know what I'm saying? Out of these lemons. In my mind, that's how it is.
Yeah, I mean, well, just to, you know, to close it out, this is the evolution. This is the inevitable transition. This is what's next. I mean, like social media is already so integrated into our lives. I remember when we first started noticing
Twitter being on TV.
Twitter being at the bottom of ESPN and the news was the first people to start embracing like the Twitter ticker. I mean, and a lot of like journalism just takes place on Twitter now. So it's like it's already so integrated into like our society. This is the inevitable step, and I think we should start thinking about what it means, especially us as marginalized people, as people outside of the normative folks. What that means for us? What's the next step? So With that being said, that was the social media chop. So you can go ahead and close it out.
Hey, it's big love to y'all. Appreciate y'all popping in with us while we talk a little bit about Meta and also talk about Kyle Rittenhouse. Definitely a whole lot of other things we wanted to get to, but don't even worry about it, because one of the things we will talk about that we've been having on ice for y'all for a second is another Black People Don't. Us and homegirl Amber been going back and forth, kind of hitting and missing each other because, you know, protests, a lot of different things happening in other countries, which is where she is. But next Monday, it goes down. Black People Don't travel internationally, right, or become expats or expatriates, which means you used to live in the United States and you don't do that shit no more. So we're going to talk to somebody who decided to go ahead and take the big leap and get on outside. Yeah, and talk to her about some stuff. But we got a lot of great stuff going on for the rest of the month, so make sure y'all stay with us every week. Definitely appreciate y'all. If you want to peep out some of my content, I finally got the website up. So if you want to go send me some visits, go sit on my website real quick. HigherDefinitionLEC.com. Higher definition, like your TV, like your phones, like your devices. Higher definition, LEC. That stands for Leadership and Empowerment Coaching. HigherDefinitionLEC.com. Go check me out. The brand is booming. We're trying to make some moves. Let me come holler at y'all about leadership. Put you on game and get you out of the mindset that leadership is a title, or leadership is some type of credential or some type of degree you get or something like that, or some type of job you have. Nah, leadership is a mindset. Leadership is a personality trait. Either you got it or you don't, maybe. Some people, followers, walking around, just stuff they see, stuff they scroll through, stuff Meta shows them is where they get their direction and their cues from. It ain't a leader-like bone in their body. So if you want to change that up and that's you, I'm talking to you. Go to higherdefinitionlec.com and come holler at me real quick. Let's talk about
higherdefinitionlec.com.
LEC.com.
Yeah. And I ain't got no website yet.
It's coming.
But
it's coming. It's on the way.
You know what I'm saying?
It's so
I am offering government equity training. You know what I'm saying? Government employees that is available, you know what I'm saying, from the Political Plug. For booking right now, hit the DM at the Political Plug on Instagram. You know what I'm saying? We talking about the relationship that equity plays in diversity and inclusion, because you can't have diversity. People will not feel included if you have not created equitable spaces for people to feel a part of.
That's part equitable of spaces.
That's a part of government's responsibility. But that's for another day. Again, for the booking, Political Plug, government and equity training, that's IG at the Political Plug. With that being said, Toya.
Hey, we gonna consciously. Don't we
got to
talk to you real quick?
Man, everybody know what he got.
GeorgieSpeaks.com. Yeah, if you don't catch him there, catch him on Wednesday night.
Yeah, man. I took 2 week break, but I'll be back tomorrow.
Okay. Tomorrow night, 9:30 p.m. Check him out. He'll make sure to keep you plugged in with all of that. Don't forget, if you got a donation, we appreciate the ones that y'all have dropped on here to us, but the Women's Debate Institute.org is another site that y'all can go holler at if you want to look for a good cause this holiday season to kind of contribute to. Great organization, Women's Debate Institute.org. We'll talk more about them next week. I ain't going to bog y'all down with that, but in the words of the plug, we're going to end the show the same way we started the show. We out.
Just like she said.
Me, my guys, we really live. Lord, forgive me, pay my tithes. Please don't have me reach inside in the center console. Keep the semi when I ride. Little penny when I...